Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
You're listening to First Time Dads
with me, Richard Innes,
and me, Steve Meyer.
In this episode, we caught up with Olympic long jump champion Greg Rutherford, who explained to us how just because you're fit enough to be an Olympic champ doesn't necessarily mean you're fit enough to be a dad. He will explain all in a moment. We were talking to Greg after he teamed up with Lego City as part of their Lego Hero City campaign in a bid to encourage children to nurture their hero gene. Enjoy. Hi, Greg. Thanks very much for joining us. Very nice to have you with us on First Time Dads.
Pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
And a fellow dad as well. Greg, tell us your kids, how old they are.
Yes, so I have my oldest Milo, who is almost exactly 4.5, and my youngest Rex, if I do the maths, is about 21 months now, I think, 21 months. Mm. So in the throes of the fun stage, especially with Rex. I mean, Milo's amazing. He's sort of feels like a big boy now, which is kind of odd. Yeah. That goes very quickly.
Is he at school now, Milo? Is he of that sort of age yet?
Five.
No, he goes in September.
Oh, of course, yeah, right.
He's an October baby.
How do they get on with each other? I've got two, Jackson, who's 3, and Iris, who's 1. And it's interesting to watch the dynamic of interaction, shall we say.
Yeah, definitely. Milo definitely tries to be the older brother, that's for sure. The issue we slightly have now, I think, is because Rex is again developing his own personality and is quite into everything. He will want anything that Milo has, but then equally Milo will then want anything that Rex has got, purely because Rex has then got it. So it's one of those things of trying to explain to a 4.5-year-old that the baby pretty much will be interested for about 3 seconds and we'll put it back down. So please don't fight over it.
Yeah, exactly.
But they get on really well. I mean, it is lovely. I mean, there's little things. I mean, when we're in the car together, their car seats are obviously split by the middle seat. But what they often do, they hold hands, which is like every time I see it, I just like absolutely melt. I'm terrible. I'm quite an emotional person anyway. But like seeing the kids in those sorts of situations, it's really, really lovely. I absolutely love it.
It is funny how that to me is the fundamental difference between being a parent and not being a parent, is that you just become a really soppy sod, don't you? I mean, there's no kind of the amount of things that my son does, which I guess I take for granted a little bit, but you do regularly have your heart melt, as you were saying. It's
absolutely.
There's all sorts of things, and it's all really trivial. One thing I need to actually say, because I'm sitting here with two men who have two young children, as someone who is about to have baby number 2.
Yeah, congratulations, Rich.
Congratulations. Yeah, all right. Yeah. Do you know, if people keep saying congratulations to me, and it sounds entirely inappropriate. Like, I feel like I'm about to go to war. So I feel like I'm literally about to be deployed to go into a war zone, and I'm getting on the plane and everyone's saying congratulations, mate. So no, that doesn't feel like the right emotion. Yeah. Doesn't feel like the right words.
It is a funny thing though, isn't it? With that sort of, whenever you are adding children to the horde, if you like, it's people do want to congratulate you, then you very quickly find that it's quite difficult, and then you get that sleep deprivation again, because obviously by the time you're having your second one, generally you're now into a routine where you're sleeping
exactly,
it's back to normality
exactly,
whereas very quickly you remember how difficult it is having a baby. But then on top of that, you've then got the oldest running around as well and wanting entertainment. So I remember when Rex came along, it was a massive, massive shock to the system. And I was in a situation where I was injured. So I wasn't competing as much, so I couldn't train as much. So then I was around a lot more. And I suddenly realised how much of the strain that Susie took with Milo, because all of a sudden I went from being away a lot, travelling all the time, etc., to sort of being there for every single thing. And it's hard. But I mean, it's incredible, but I mean, it's hard.
That's the thing that no one really talks about, is just how tough being a parent is in terms of the physical demands yeah. and the lack of time to yourself you have. And you're right what you say. It is incredibly rewarding. It's amazing, and you know, melts your heart every day, and your heart can burst, etc., etc. But it can feel like a little bit of a slog some nights.
The physicality definitely. Thing is interesting, actually, Greg, because as an international athlete, am I right in saying, by the way, that you were at one point, you were the European, Commonwealth, World and Olympic champion all at one point? You were, weren't you?
Yeah.
Just chuck
that
in. It
feels like a lifetime ago. I look at my stomach now and realise I'm very far from that athlete that I once was. But it was, it was good while it lasted, my career. I had a good time.
Well, I'm just wondering with that, given that you were, you know, like a genuinely elite, world-class athlete, are there elements of parenting, for instance, and being a dad? Because Steve's talking rightly so about the physical strain that it puts on. I mean, I'm constantly doing my back or like pulling something in my neck or whatever, you know, because I am horribly out of shape. Is it a bit different when you're, you know, an Olympic level athlete?
No. And do you know what? Actually, I think on one level, it's possibly worse, purely because...
I doubt that very much. No, but go on, please do explain. What?
The weird thing is, like, you train for a specific set of movements, as I always did. I mean, fundamentally, I ran in a straight line and jumped into a sandpit. I mean, it was a ridiculous existence. I mean, it was a great existence, but I mean, it was ridiculous. But I was fit and able in that capacity. But then if you get me to stand up for probably an hour, if I'm literally just standing up, my back starts to give way, my feet start to hurt, my legs are aching. So then if I'm carrying a child on top of that, it's genuinely difficult, and it's these silly little things. And actually, since retirement, I've got better at that side of things, purely because you sort of, I guess, if you like, inverted commas, become a bit more normal. Mm. And you're not training every day for that specific set of movements. So actually, as a sort of in the sort of early stages of being a dad, I found it really, really difficult and a massive shock. Because the other thing is, as a sports person, you're a massively selfish individual. You have to be, not in a sort of being horrible to other people, but selfish in the way of everything about what you do. You have to consider the sport that you're in, especially if you still want to be world class. And then you stop all of that, and then you have to completely go the other way. But during it, still, you have to think, okay, yes, I'm meant to be off my feet, but my little one wants to run around in the garden, whatever else. Okay, yeah, I'll just go and do that for a bit. But equally, and it's funny, it comes from all different angles when you're sort of a sports person and then become a dad. It's the best way in the world of switching off. And I think from my point of view, performance started to go up because all of a sudden I wasn't just stressing about a training session that went bad or a competition that didn't quite go to plan. All of a sudden I'm thinking, I go home, all I do is play with my son, as it was at that point. And I just have fun. And that switching off period, I think, was hugely important for me to go forward and have better performances.
That's interesting. Yeah. So you weren't going back over a performance because you haven't got the time and you've got a very welcome distraction.
Completely. And that was a big thing. You go home and a child doesn't particularly care that you could only take 8 jumps in the training session rather than 12 because your hamstring was a bit tight. I mean, they just want to roll around and play with you and have fun. And then you start to put things into perspective. And I think that was a huge thing for me. All of a sudden you start thinking, do you know what? As much as the jumping is my life, it's important for my career as it was at that point, but it's not the most important thing in the world to me. Actually, being a dad, having fun with my kids and trying to give them memories that they'll sort of always have in a good light. And that's far more important to me.
That's really interesting because we've had, and this is kind of a recurring theme with some of the athletes we've had on the podcast, actually, because we spoke to Freddie Flintoff and we spoke to Alex Gregory, who was a gold medalist in rowing for Britain at the recent Olympics. And they both said very, very similar things to what you're saying here, that sense of perspective actually helped their performance. Because I think that, you know, from a naive perspective, I think most people would look at being a father and think, well, you're exhausted. You're always exhausted mentally, physically, you're constantly exhausted. And therefore, that must have a negative impact on athletic performance if that's what you do for a living. But what you're saying and what those guys have said is quite the contrary, actually, that actually that sense of perspective enables you to perform better.
Absolutely. The mental side of sport is as important as the physical side of it. And I think if you can put yourself into a good place and quite a happy place, performances really do come from that. And being a dad was something that I had wanted for a very, very long time anyway. So I was thrilled when Susie sort of told me that she was pregnant. And I was very, very excited about the prospect of becoming a dad. Now, obviously, again, as you all know, like you can't be actually prepared for what happens. And it is very, very difficult. Milo came along in the October, so I was still just about the end of my break period after the season. So I, the first couple of weeks were hard, but then I went back into training. Susie took most of the load, and I just cracked on. But again, coming home and having this this little human just there who wants to spend time with you, smiles when they see you, and as they get older, there's more interaction, etc. That for me gave me a good reason to rush home after training and do something different. And actually, as Milo got older, especially, it gave me a reason to make somebody else proud as well, and actually achieve things for them. And that was a big thing for me. So 2013 was an awful year for me. I got really injured, had all the, all these problems, etc. And I felt like I had to prove a point. Going to 2014, Susie then falls pregnant. So I spend most of the summer away, but knowing that this child's coming along, I was very excited about it. I had a great summer. And then into 2015, being the first full year of being a dad, I had the greatest season of my career. Yeah, winning Olympic gold medal, yes, is the highlight. But actually, athletically and physically, 2015 was by far the best year of my career.
And that was, and Milo was born in
October 14.
October 14, I see. So yeah, you, and would you, you directly equate that then? You don't think that's a coincidence? You think that the fact that 2015 was your best year was genuinely off the back of you becoming a dad for the first time?
Oh, I think it had a, had a huge impact, absolutely. I mean, because again, all the things that I said, that you, you're not stressing about the little things as much. You also have a reason to really push it. I mean, look, I was incredibly lucky. My coach, a guy called Dan Paff, is one of the greatest sort of physical coaches in the world. I mean, not just for athletics. I mean, he's a guru within athletics, but outside of that, he's worked with people from every sport going at the very highest level, multiple Olympic champions, world record holders, etc., top tennis players, golfers, all these different people. So I was lucky to have him, of course, and he was fundamental in my success. But actually, mentally, from my point of view, having Milo on the scene was massive. And and it genuinely, in my, I think it was a huge reason to why 2015 went as well as it did.
Did you have expectations of what it was going to be like to be a dad, and have anything surprised you about it?
Do you know what? I don't know what expectations I had of being a dad. Actually, I mean, look, all of the things that we talk about, like not having any sleep and sort of dealing with dirty nappies all the time and that sort of stuff, that that I sort of I guess would happen, but you're still not prepared for it. I think the, probably the overriding thing for me is something we touched on before, is actually how emotional I became when I became a dad, and actually how much I started noticing more things. I mean, if an advert comes on and it shows a poorly child or something like that now, I genuinely have an emotional response to it. And if I read an article which involves children that have either been unwell or something's happened, like, I really seem to struggle with that now. And that's, I think that, that that sort of overpowering sense of love that you have when you have your children, you can all of a sudden relate to a certain degree. Obviously, I'm very lucky. I don't know what it's like to go through having a sick child, and heaven forbid that ever happens. But that that sense of sort of worry and fear for others that you suddenly have just from having a child, it's amazing. It sort of changed me overnight, genuinely. All of a sudden, I became an emotional wreck with everything.
What about from the negative emotional side? Because I think it's the something that Steve and I have talked about on previous podcasts. The thing that surprised me, I think I knew there was going to be this kind of magical positivity that would swarm all over you at points. But what kind of took me by surprise
is how
stressful and also how frustrated and angry I'd get. And I remember when Ben, my boy, who's just turned two, that's Ben. When he was really still quite little, I was getting really angry with him. Like, and you know, this is when he was still an infant. You know, he doesn't know what he's doing, and I would be feeling furious. And then you get into that kind of spiral of, why the hell am I angry at my son? Am I a terrible father? What's that about? So, have you had much experience of that as well? Have you found that the negative emotion of it is quite alarming sometimes?
No, hugely. I distinctly remember. So we were in Laguna last year. So it's like my final training camp, big training camp going into the summer. I sort of knew my career was over, but I sort of did everything I possibly could to see if I could salvage a season. And Susie met up with a friend who she has in California as well, and went out for the evening. And now I love spending time with kids on my own. I'm not sort of one of those, oh, it's just daddy daycare, whatever else. I think I'm a dad. So I mean, I'm just being a dad. Yeah. But Susie went out and she was out relatively late, which is great. She's having a good time. But Rex, the youngest at the time, and I mean, at that point, Rex was, what, 10 months or so, he lost the plot. And I mean, like when I say lost the plot, I mean, we're screaming and screaming and screaming, and nothing I could do could make him happy or calm him down. And Susie doesn't go out very often. The poor thing, like, I'm desperately always trying, like, just go out and see people, go and do things. But she's always worried about leaving the children. So I didn't want to ring her to say, could you come home? Because he's literally now been screaming for 3 or 4 hours. And I'm thinking, like, he'll go to sleep at some point. I mean, he looks knackered, but he's just screaming. But then on top of it, you're getting this level of frustration thinking, like, why are you still screaming? I'm doing everything possible except for breastfeed you. And that was obviously what he wanted at that point for reassurance. And you do, you start getting really frustrated and sort of inwardly angry, and you're sort of rocking a child going, just please stop doing absolutely. What you're doing. It gets really, really stressful and quite horrible. And I think that's that sense as well, because most children seem to often rely on, I guess, especially if they're breastfed, I think, of that comfort when they want to go to sleep, of boob in mouth, they go to sleep, et cetera, et cetera. When they don't have that, it really is this sort of panic from their point of view, and there's nothing you can do for it. And that you then question yourself quite a lot. And I'll be honest, I got really upset by the end of it, because I'm desperately trying to do my best for him. I mean, he's absolutely fine, obviously. I mean, he's just been away from Susie for a couple of hours. But you do, I got emotional. I got quite upset by it. And as well, you get inwardly very, very angry. And I think that's at times it's difficult for dads, because you just can't find the reason or the one thing to stop them crying. And then mum comes back and they're absolutely fine.
I had exactly the same experience when Jackson was a little boy, that what would happen is he'd need to be comforted back to sleep by his mum.
Yeah.
And we soon realised that this wasn't going to work long term, because all it would mean is my wife Zoe would be doing it all the time. And I wasn't really confronting the fact that I couldn't do it. So one night she went out to the cinema and just left me with him. And I had exactly the same experience you described, where he wouldn't settle, wouldn't be comforted, would cry. And it was a long night. It was my eventually he settled. My wife came back and she said, you know, she looked at me and she could tell what I'd been through. I'd put myself through that. But strangely, having gone through it, it then makes me more confident as a dad. And I'm more, you know, I'll face it again. You know, you do it again. It's like confronting, not your fears, but confronting a difficult challenge, coming through it and then go, right, I've done that. I can do that again. It gave me confidence as a dad.
See, I think that's true to an extent, but then maybe this just says more about me than anything else. But I would get regularly frustrated in those early days when mum was able to, at the click of her fingers, you know, she can fix it. And you as the dad, you're standing and you're there trying for hours on occasion, trying to settle the kid, trying desperately to do anything you can to make your kid calm down. And all it takes is mum to virtually appear in the room.
It's time though, isn't it? It's time with your kids. I so strongly believe that if you were spending the amount of time that your wife spends with the kids, in most cases, you would have that relationship. And the wife would find it difficult. I mean, I've just come back to work after 3 months shared parental leave, where I was, you know, primary carer for both kids. And my relationship with my daughter, Iris, is now that I can comfort her when she cries in the night. Not better than my wife can, but certainly it seems easier for me, because I've been doing it in more recent memory. And it's my wife that's like in the middle of the night going, she won't settle. And I go, give it to me, you know, I'll do it. I think it's time.
Yeah, it's an interesting one as well, isn't it? I mean, like, even with both the boys as a baby, if they woke up crying in the night, generally I was sort of chief rocker to get them back to sleep. if they were sort of full, they didn't want any more boo. But it's definitely difficult when they are young and they are reliant on, again, I sort of say it because Susie's breastfed both the children. Rex is still being breastfed, actually, at 21 months. She's going to aim to sort of try and stop that soon, which will be interesting. But it is difficult in that sense as well, when they don't just see mum as just a comfort, but actually see them as sort of a source of nutrient, nourishment, et cetera, as well. Yeah, completely. Yeah. And I think that's then when it can become even more difficult as well. And I think probably for dads that don't get involved at all, and I never really understand that, the dads that aren't interested in sort of changing nappies or feeding or whatever else if they can't, that probably develops a large gap between the child's development and actually that relationship with the dad as well. But I say with breastfeeding, I think as the dad, you really do feel quite useless at times.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it's the most brilliant thing in the world if you can do it. Of course, I mean, not every mum can do it, but if you can, it's a wonderful thing to do. But for the dads, at times you can really be like, God, literally, there is nothing I can do that this child is going to enjoy or want, and you can feel a little bit useless, which obviously fundamentally you're not, because there's so many other things you can do. But at times, definitely, especially when it is hard, you're very tired, quite emotional, it can be a difficult time.
It does turn around quickly enough as well. I mean, I'm talking about all the memories I have from the early days, and actually now I look at it, I mean, this morning Ben didn't want anything to do with his mum, he just wanted daddy. So it does like you say, it does turn around pretty quickly. And breastfeeding is an enormous part of that, I think. I think Ben was breastfed until he was about 15 months old, something like that,
right?
And the point at which it wasn't actually out of choice. Lindsay, being pregnant, her body just sort of decided, nope, there's no more milk for this child. And I actually very vividly remember she was giving him a breastfeed before he went to bed, as she would do normally. And suddenly she's in tears and he's in tears. And I walk into the room thinking, what the hell has just happened here? And I could tell from the look on her face, she could just feel that suddenly there was no more milk.
Oh,
and
no.
And she's in bits, he's in bits. So I kind of just swept him up, took him out of the room. Right, I'll come back and deal with you in a minute. Put him to bed. But yeah, from that point on, actually, he's been far more forthcoming of time with daddy.
Yeah, so, definitely. Yeah.
And I think it's interesting what you said about the there's a gap that if you're not present as a dad. I mean, we've had a child psychologist on talking about how dads don't get the reward when the baby's really small, but if you spend time with them, you get the reward when they're, you know, 3, 4
down the line,
and you don't realize you've missed it until it's too late to take the time back, I think.
Yeah, it makes complete sense. I mean, what's really interesting in the household, and it drives Susie mad at times, is that sort of I'm also king of rough and tumble, and it's like, for me, I love playing with the kids all the time. Like, we have such a good laugh and everything else. So for Susie, at times it becomes a bit much, because then I generally get them quite hyped up as well before bed, without meaning to, of course. I just quite enjoy playing with them. But seeing as they've grown, and now what's really interesting with Rex is he watches what Milo does and copies pretty much everything. But I have this amazing relationship where I can roll around on the floor playing, being silly, whatever else. But equally, on top of that, there's now this development where we all just hug on the sofa as well. And it's one of the nicest things. You can put something on. And that's grown, I think, as they've got older. And as I say, with the younger one, it's easier, I think, because they just mimic so much of what the older one is doing. And that has come from spending time. And obviously, from my point of view now, I'm around an awful lot more than I was before, because I'm not having to travel for competitions. Now, we're also lucky, because of what Susie does, she was able to travel. So she would come for camps and things. But I think 2016, I spent something like 6 months of the year in America training. Of that, probably 10 weeks, Susie and Milo were there. So there was huge gaps where I wasn't around for Milo.
That's a big chunk of time, yeah.
It's massive, yeah, and thankfully it didn't seem to affect anything. He was, I guess, maybe just about young enough that it didn't impact to the point where he didn't want to have a relationship or anything like that. So it's fantastic now. But watching that build is hugely important to me, hugely important to them, and purely can happen because I am around now. And it's the greatest thing. Being a dad for me is far better than winning medals and doing that sort of stuff. I get so much more reward from it. And I love the fact now that I'm retired and I can do that. It's brilliant.
Greg, early retirement.
Greg, just if you don't mind talking about this, I'm just thinking about our listeners. There might be some dads that be interested in the you mentioned about the breastfeeding, continuing into 20 months. How are you guys going to approach coming off that breastfeeding? Because, you know, it's, as Rich said, it can be trauma for both sides, mum and child. Have you guys talked about why you're going to do it and how you might approach it?
Yeah, so from Susie's point of view, she's keen, because I mean, he's going to get to two. The idea is he'll go to two, because Milo was a little bit older when he came off. Mm-hmm. But Susie's decided she wants to get to two. I mean, it's very difficult, because I think Susie quite enjoys it. It's quite a nice thing, and I think for mum and baby.
Yeah,
it's a really lovely close bond that they have, and it's a big thing. And similar to what you were saying before, when Susie stopped breastfeeding, she was with Milo, sorry, initially, she was a bit emotional, and it was sort of that realisation that she's not doing it anymore. Equally, she was also pregnant, so then she had the shortest amount of time off, and then along came Rex. But what we've sort of said is that Susie's going to attempt going away for a couple of days. Now, she'll be close by in case it goes into complete meltdown. But it's something that I'm going to have to be really prepared for. But
cold turkey.
Yeah, he's going to be going cold turkey.
We're going to try it anyway. And it's going to be something that, I mean, he feeds a lot less now than he used to anyway. I mean, that happens as they get older, etc. He eats a lot more now. And I mean, he's quite a good eater. So we're quite lucky. So I think a lot of it is comfort for sleeping. So what we're going to attempt is me just really just being with him to try and get him down to sleep, etc. And really hope for the best. But I mean, from my point of view, when doing it, it's not going to be a case of if he doesn't sleep or cries so much and I'm tired, I'm going to just bring Susie back. I'm going to try and push on as much as I possibly can, because I know for Susie as well, it'd be quite useful. And then there's the discussion of more children, etc. So I think cold turkey is going to be the approach initially, and then we'll see how that goes. But as I say, in the meantime, it's lessening the amount he feeds anyway. So, I mean, it's nothing like, obviously, when he's a baby, all the time. He's pretty much fed once or twice a day now. So I'm hoping it won't be too difficult. Hoping.
Greg, I'm just jumping around subject matters here as stuff pops into my head. But you mentioned before, in a bit of excessive modesty, you described what you did as running and jumping into a sandpit, which I think is probably underselling it ever so slightly. You could jump 8.5 meters. That's pretty damn impressive. But I'm wondering, you obviously, with two toddlers, you must spend a lot of time in sandpits. Is there any sort of weird flashbacks you get occasionally while sitting in a sandpit with your boys?
Well, the interesting thing is that especially Rex at the moment, he loves jumping. Like, he's constantly jumping. And he's never really seen me jump because I basically retired when he was a baby still with obviously no memory of it. But the thing is, we have the runway and the sandpit in the back garden. It's always there. If I look out the bedroom window, I can see it. Actually, from where I am right now, I can just about see the track. So there's going to be a level of sandpit and track involved in their life as long as we live in this house, to be totally honest. But I've now got plans to change that up a little bit and maybe turn it into a bit of a fort around the pit itself, so they can have a bit more fun. But it is a funny thing. The weirdest thing though is people's other responses to me being near a sandpit.
I was gonna say, you must get a lot of smart ass comments.
Yeah, I mean, like, you wouldn't believe. There's a lot. I mean, we don't have to go through them all, but there's a lot of comments. And you go anywhere and it's obviously a bit of a running joke and you try and stay away from it as much as you possibly can. But the other thing is, what's really interesting is everybody's assumption that the children are now going to be athletes as well. This is one of the weirdest things I've had to get used to, because I didn't come from a sort of a family, but my mum and dad weren't athletes or anything. They did a bit of sport growing up, etc., but they had very normal jobs and a working class upbringing. So now all of a sudden, everybody just assumes that the boys are going to be athletes, and particular long jumpers as well, which, I mean, I don't know, it's probably people's lack of understanding of sort of how you get there and the physicality is natural ability, etc. But everybody will stop and say, oh, is he going to be a jumper when he's older? Oh, he looks like a jumper. You just think, like, I mean, it's such a niche physical activity anyway. I mean, like, the likelihood of anybody really becoming it, it's very small, but let alone my two children as well. But they expect it. It's really weird. People sort of expect you to now want them to, that's it. That's all they can be.
Do you ever worry about pressure being put on them because of that?
That's a huge part of it. Yeah. I mean, the other thing is as well, I mean, look, I'm going to have them in sports camps. I sort of encourage them already to kick a football and have fun, run around, etc. From my point of view, though, knowing what it's like being in a world of professional sport, how difficult it is, etc. If they show sporting ability, then of course I'll promote that as much as I possibly can. But from my point of view, there is zero pushiness, sort of that sort of stressed out parents that you often see that scream for their children to get on the ball, etc. There's going to be none of that from me. I'll support them if they're good, but equally, I really, really hope they can get a good education and be bright and not take the risks that I took, which was walk away from education quite early in order to sort of fulfill this dream of becoming a sports person, which I have to be told, of course, there's a lot of ability, etc., but I'm still very, very lucky. A lot of kids that try that, it never happens for them. So I'm very fortunate that it worked. But for me, if they're intelligent, if they're happy, hopefully they want to stay fit and healthy, because that is very important to me. But there is no pushy parents situation here where they're going to have to become sports people or athletes.
And Greg, you sort of slightly alluded to it when we were talking about the breastfeeding earlier. Are you going to go again for number three?
Yeah.
I thought he was talking about gold medals for a minute.
The big question that everybody with two boys must get asked.
Yeah. Are we going to try for a girl? Are we going again? I think so. It's a funny thing for us, me and Susie. I mean, Susie's one of four, I'm one of three.
Okay.
We always said when we were dating, whatever else, like we like the idea of four children plus. Then you have the first one, you go, what on earth was I talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know one of the interesting things actually I get a lot is people that haven't had children yet that then go, do you know what I really hope for? Twins or triplets. And you go, what are you talking about?
Why? You're out of your damn mind.
That must be the hardest thing in the world. But like, yeah, no, but you get them done quickly. I think, my God, knowing how difficult.
No idea.
Yeah, exactly. But from our point of view, yeah, I think three at least.
Okay.
And then we'll see. Susie's very keen. Now, she always tells me off for this because I always go, Susie wants more children. But look, I do. It's hard with two, of course. But what you have is you have one parent can take one child
exactly.
at a time.
Exactly. Split them. One each. Man marking. Exactly.
You want to be outnumbered.
You have to be zonal.
Exactly.
You have to go zonal now.
Exactly. You're going to have to go zonal, which is going to be really interesting, but we'll see. I mean, it's one of those things that we've had the discussion. It would be nice. We're quite settled, which is really good. We've been fortunate with Rex. Now, the issue we also had with Milo is that it was a bit of a horror birth, and everything that could go wrong went wrong. So Susie was really put off initially, and then when we'd finally had the conversation about the potential of more, we didn't realize she was already pregnant. So having Rex, which was far nicer, we had like a really good experience with the birth of Rex. I think that settled her a lot, and we've had the conversation, and yeah, we'll look to having at least one more, I think.
Well, we'll have to get you back on when you've had three and you can tell us what the big, why on earth didn't you talk me out of it, boys?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not even at number two yet. I mean, number two is due at any time now in the next few weeks.
Fantastic.
But I've already said to my that's us. That's us done at two.
Yeah, really?
Me too.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
I said, you can have three, but it won't be with me.
I don't know if it's just that I'm a grumpy, selfish old sod or what. I don't know. But I've always had it in my mind, actually, that two was I'm one of four. And maybe I've got a different kind of mindset to you guys from big families as well. I don't know. I've just always thought I want to be able to focus on those two, and that's it.
I don't think I've got
There is a side of that with me as well. I must admit, and me and Susie have talked about that as well, is the fact that if we add another one into the mix, and you have to be honest and serious about these sort of things. I mean, it's a conversation you have to have. I mean, the cost that comes with that, the time, etc., and going through all of the baby phase again, which we're just about coming out of with Rex, it's a lot. And that is genuinely a fear of mine. The more children we have, the more we have to make sure that we can provide and keep them in a very sort of stable environment and ideally give them the upbringing that we've sort of so far been able to give to Rex and Milo. But it is a concern. It's funny how those conversations evolve. I mean, Milo came along. He was a bit of a shock, but we were both completely thrilled. Similar with Rex. And now we're having the conversation saying, actually, if we have more, are we going to be able to make sure that we can give them the same upbringing? We think definitely for another one, absolutely we can. And then it'll be interesting to see whether or not a fourth is talked about.
You're right about the conversations evolving. I can already see the way my wife's playing it because I'm being very categoric and say, right, two, this one will come along, that'll be us. And I can see the way she's talking about it. She's like, yep. And I can see in the back of her mind, give it 18 months, we'll get through the bad bit and then I'll be able to raise number three again. I can already see that conversation. Yeah. That's exactly what she's thinking. She won't admit it, but I can see it's what she's thinking.
But it's hard, isn't it? Because if one half of the relationship is keen for more children and the other half isn't, I mean, that must be a really, really difficult thing. I mean, I think in our household, Susie probably came round to it a bit quicker than I did, but we're both okay with it. It's fine. And there's going to be people out there who one half is desperate for it, the other half isn't. And that must be really, really hard to deal with because I can imagine that can cause some problems in the relationship as well.
Yeah, I mean, my wife and I, she's very keen. She would be keen, but we had a discussion and I said, I don't think I could do it. And she said, okay, that's where we are. I mean, I just think you need to be the relationship's the strongest bit of the family, isn't it? That's the keep the kids safe and warm and looked after, and you need to focus on that, I think, as the primary plank.
I think you both need the power of veto as well. I think that's really, really important, that you can't say if one person's 100%, if the other one's 70%, then you shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
You've both got to be 100% or not do it at all.
But then I've got a boy and a girl, so I feel like we've ticked those boxes.
I'm like you, Greg. I'm going to have two boys.
Oh, yeah.
We already know this. The number two is another rugrat, another, oh, my God, he's going to be just like Ben. It's going to be... my boy is not quite shy and retiring by any stretch of the imagination.
Oh, great!
We had the scan the other day. We had a 34-week scan, and the lady who was doing the scan couldn't believe how much this child was moving around. She was laughing about it. She said, "This is insane! I've never seen a child wriggle this much in the womb."
Oh, wow!
I thought, that bodes well, doesn't it? Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. Good luck. Yes. So they definitely don't slow down when they come out.
No, that's for damn sure.
Right, Greg. Thanks very much. I mean, we've had. Had you for quite a...
We've taken up more than enough of your time.
Yeah, exactly. You need to get out and rake that sandpit.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah. The other problem is now we rehomed some cats, and I think we all know what happens with sand and cats.
Giant litter tray.
Yeah, I tell you what, it's not just taking out the kids' toys now, it's also taking out little surprises that the cats leave as well. Dear. So that's fun.
Well, let's not keep you from that job any longer.
No, please. Can we record another one now, please? That'd be lovely.
Thanks very much for coming on and talking to us. And yeah, when number three comes along or number four, we'll definitely have to get you back on to give us that unique perspective.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I'd love to. That'd be great. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate you having me.
Take care.